Welcome to the JP Morgan Weekender. I'm Bruce Kasman. With me this weekender is Joe Lupton. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Bruce. Getting ready for the holiday, your holiday attire on?
Exactly. So just to let everybody know, we're at now recording at around 9:30 on Friday morning, so we have not seen the US PMI release, which will be out as we speak. But we do have the other DM economies, which generally send a constructive message. We should talk about that for a few minutes, and we'll, I guess, see the PMI for the U.S. as we speak. But I guess the other key issue we need to address here is the dynamic of what the Treasury did this week, how we think about the interest rate outlook. And I guess I'll just start with the idea, which is certainly coming from our Treasury strategy group as well, that the forces that are pushing up interest rates on the longer end here are fundamental. And while the actions by the U.S. Treasury trying to contain that are potentially going to have some short-term effects, they're really not going to have any material effect and could be harmful to the degree that they are undercutting the stability, predictability of what Treasury policy has been in terms of underscoring the kind of confidence in terms of U.S. asset prices and U.S. Treasuries more specifically. Against that backdrop, you know, one question we can ask is, what are those fundamental forces? And, you know, I would just argue that obviously underneath the surface, the repricing of central banks this year has been an important factor, but it's not just a repricing, I think, of the movement away from what had been easing priced in at the beginning of the year. But I think there is a sense that what we're seeing does reflect more fundamental support for a higher interest rate environment. And part of that, I think, has to do with what credit conditions are doing around not just tech, but a broader rise that we're seeing in bank credit this year. The other thing which is in the mix here is the fiscal policy stuff, which we had built easing in our forecast for this year, but we're certainly seeing continued surprises, out of Japan, surprises out of other Asian economies, partly where they're getting the dividends of their tech spending boom. And even in the U.S., where I don't know if you want to call it active fiscal easing, but we are doing tariff refunds. CBO has revised up its budget deficit. It's a little bit frustrating that it looks like we're stuck here above a 6% fiscal deficit as a share of GDP, even though the economy is generating a lot of nominal growth in 2026. So here's the backdrop. We're going to set ourselves up for Jackson Hole. We're going to set ourselves up for the September meeting from central banks, where we're now looking for a BOJ hike. Let me leave that here and let you jump in, Joe, to kind of give your perspective on how you want to put things together.
Well, I guess I would just start to fill in a part of the picture, and obviously we're going to debate a lot our kind of thinkings around interest rates, central bank policy, and kind of longer term interest rates and what Treasury is trying to do. But just on the macro side of things, it's been kind of an interesting few weeks, and I would almost say it's really more of the same, which is to say that you've got a, the past year has been, or more of the same with an important wrinkle, I guess. You've had this past year where the consumer has been supporting things. We put a note out on that last week, which we didn't get to talk about because we didn't have a weekender last week. But it's just the important role of the consumer in driving things, and in a world without labor income that has been driven by a big fall in the saving rate. Very encouraging that you're seeing that happen in Europe, which has been up until now not really willing to kind of dip into their saving rate. And, that's consistent with wealth effects and a willingness to smooth, right, which has kind of been a theme of ours and certainly something you have stressed for the past year here. The risk, of course, is that this, can't go on forever, that you need a labor market to start to generate some more sustainable fuel for consumer spending. The saving rate can't keep going down and down and down. And then the wrinkle that I mentioned earlier is the fact that the July data is showing a labor market that had been recovering, but suddenly got a little softer. And I think it's a broad signal across a lot of July employment data around the world that things just aren't doing as well as we had hoped. Nothing's breaking, so, but it's just kind of, it took out some of the upside we saw there. Importantly, you are starting to see the consumer, at least in July, pull back a little bit. That's the kind of concerning news. The good news is that, look, business sentiment's still up. The manufacturing cycle, all the data we're getting on that, that continues to look quite strong. Business CapEx is continuing to boom. Importantly, it's broadening beyond a tech story. It's not only a tech story. That's important. And so the surveys in general, right up to the PMIs that we got from Europe, UK, Japan, and we'll be getting the US here in about 5 minutes, seem to suggest that nothing's breaking. I'd point out the claims numbers also in the U.S., not really showing any signs of anything breaking. So maybe we can continue along this path for a little bit longer. So the cycle, July, I would say, is a soft patch. We're willing to kind of look through that and stick with our cyclical lift story. I think that's a crucially important call to emphasize here. I'll stop there, Bruce. I'm happy to transition to the interest rate conversation I know we want to get into, but maybe if you want to...
请关注公众号。思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130。
Either just underscore anything I said on the cyclical stuff, you know, you can.
The only thing I would just say is that I think, you know, the consumer issue is a concern in that we can see a consumer that has been stretching. I think at this point we have been anticipating some downshift in the third quarter. I don't see anything in the July data, and we don't have very much July data, that is a reason for concern around that. I would say that that's basically aligning with what our views are. There's the concern, I think, that's more fundamental about where the support for consumer spending is going to be. And that's where I think the one legitimate concerning point in the data flow has been the labor market report in the U.S. I mean, that to the degree that it's telling us that businesses aren't hiring, that we're not generating labor income, is a concern. That I would put as a concern against the backdrop of what you were describing, which is still a pretty solid sort of read on what's coming in, even into the month of July, on Asian activity, tech spending, and the business surveys, if we'll see where we are in 4 minutes' time. But I think the balance here is really a U.S. labor market report that's disappointing. I think the energy price story is also obviously a concern. And then I think around that, the activity data and everything else, I think when you put it together, has been, you know, pretty darn supportive of solid news here, even as we turn into the third quarter.
I mean, in terms of the bottom line, I'm not going to fight you, but I wouldn't say all the data except the July U.S. employment report was weak. I mean, I would say employment data were weak in the U.K., if I recall, Korea, Brazil, employment numbers.
Fair enough. So let's broaden it and say the concern is whether labor markets are kicking in, okay? But that's basically
you're right to highlight the kind of gasoline prices are now over 410. Right.
Yeah.
That it's not just oil, it's gasoline prices are up over 410 now. And also, you know, I've been kind of pointing out this, you know, we're saying financial conditions are easy. I think there's a wrinkle there, which is that the, you know, mortgage rates are now up to 6.7.
Well, this is going to be the good segue, because I think the issue here is, let's just get into it, which is we have rising interest rates, and we've had rising interest rates as we've gone through the last few months, and to some degree that has reflected a shift in pricing of the Fed. But the last couple of weeks, we've actually been pricing out the Fed to some degree, at least taking less hiking into the next 12 months. But the longer end of curves have continued to move up. And that's, you know, that's the interesting point. I think about what's happening in financial conditions right now. I guess the way I'm looking at it, and leave aside Bessin for a moment here, you know, I see a set of forces at work here, some of which are simply the fact that the credit cycle is starting to really kick in here. as we're watching the hyperscalers borrow, as we're watching bank credit kick in, partly for the call that we're making that the non-tech business sector is picking up. There's an inventory cycle playing out. These are things which are generating greater demand here. But there is also, I think, the concerns we're seeing around fiscal in a world in which, you know, we have been seeing some fiscal easing this year, but I think we're getting more. We're getting more from Asia. We're getting more coming from the U.S. And the U.S. may not be active fiscal, but we're getting less tariff revenues coming in. CBO's raised its U.S. budget deficit forecast, I think, to 6.3% as a share of GDP for this year. So there are forces at work here. And that's, you know, that's where you have to get in and make a call as how you want to interpret it. There's an identification issue here from the perspective of what it means for the outlook. I'll let you kind of come in and, you know, say what you want on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I we've always, by the way, PMI.
Positive U.S. went up 1.5 for what it's worth to 56.
Yeah, it's all services.
Well, that's good enough for me, Joe. I don't know why you want to caveat that, but okay.
I didn't mean that as negative. I'm just saying, right? I mean, the idea that we were kind of, you know, you're seeing this manufacturing lift elsewhere. But anyway, no, there's nothing to kind of quibble about this. The surveys are looking good for August broadly. So that's an easy story. You know, I think the interest rate story is one in which you've got a cyclical part, and then you've got what's happening, you know, to kind of longer run, so-called neutral rates, and there's kind of a term premium story in there as well. I think on the cyclical front, in terms of as we're taking out Fed pricing, there's always a double-edged sword, right? I think, the positive is that, and we've always kind of said this, that hey, look, if the central bank is forced into hike from strength, then I think this is not really too much of a problem in a world with healthy fundamentals. And frankly, I would argue that the hiking in 22, 23 was hiking from a position of extreme strength, which is why we, or at least from the global side, kind of you and me, like, you know, we're kind of pushing back against the idea of a recession call, that you had these kind of late cycle interest rates, but mid cycle fundamentals and healthy fundamentals. We're going to really, this is more about, you know, taking your foot off the accelerator from a position of strength. So you could argue there's a little bit of that going on here, which is, you know, fundamentals certainly aren't as healthy as they were, say, 3 years ago, but, you know, there's reason to think that they're still healthy. And so this near-term rise in interest rates isn't something that should worry us.
I don't think you can dismiss the fact that it could be primarily that. We are now starting to see business demand pick up, business credit demand pick up particularly. And you can argue, I'm not arguing this is the entirety of the story, but I actually think a significant portion of what is happening now in the business cycle is we're seeing strong business demand, we're seeing strong credit demand, and that is having an impact on interest rates. And in that context, if that were the primary thing that was driving it, you should be seeing short end rates respond to what's happening more broadly along the curve. I wouldn't fight that as a particularly important part of what's happening right now.
No, but I would also point out that there are potential vulnerabilities here. And I said there's a double-edged sword. And the other side of it is, if you're in a world where a lot of your asset prices, which have been the key source of support in a world with no labor income and wealth effects have been important, if asset prices are kind of heavily dependent on a world in which interest rates are going to stay low, and the fundamental kind of story supporting these asset prices is more vulnerable, that can be a problem, right?
And so, of course, it could be a problem, but right now it's not. I mean, you can argue that higher interest rates are going to be their own source of demise, and I actually am sympathetic for that, but I think it's early in the game and it's slow. It's still early in the movement on interest rates, and there's not a set. I think you'll need a central bank piece of this to get this thing to really be active. I think the question is right now, I think the important question right now is what signal should we be taking from this directly? Is this a signal, as you're saying, of strength in the business cycle that central banks should respond to? Or is this a signal of some risk premium, some, concern and tightening in financial conditions that the direct effect of this is going to be negative for growth? That should be the thing we're really grappling with right now. Is this a tightening in financial conditions, or is this a shift out in the IS curve, so to speak, that's telling us that demand is stronger? Which is it from your point of view?
I think it's the shifting out in the IS curve. It's a position of strength, but I also think there are elements of the kind of financial space, i.e.
Yeah, there's a risk here. There's a risk here that this could spill out in a negative way. All taken. But let's talk about the central bank side of it.
Let me finish a second. The BIS has a report that just came out looking at these kind of asset bubble type cycles, and they go back to canals and railroads and, the
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 V, CN20210130.
Tech boom. They all last about 4 to 5 years, and we're in the 4th to 5th year of this kind of, tech boom. And they also all note that the catalyst is a rise in interest rates that kind of sets off the correction. Yes, you recognize the risk.
But Joe, I'm with you there. I've been pushing this point too, but I've been looking at it as a 6-7 story, which means that this story needs to run. It needs to have a more extended, the credit cycle from the point of view of the actual data is really like less than 12 months old in terms of the strength, that it needs a central bank side of it. So to me, the issue is before we get to that storyline that this is going to cause a financial event, we need to have this run for a while. We need to have it reflected in strong activity, and we need to have it reflected in central banks hiking. And I think the immediate question here is how are central banks going to respond to this? If they're going to respond to this in the way that Kevin Warsh said at the last press conference, to say, well, this is a reflection that the market's doing our work for us and we don't have to respond to it. Or is it the way I described a minute ago, which is that the markets are telling you need higher rates more generally, and then central banks should be bringing the short end to align more closely with the long end? I mean, isn't that the more immediate issue to address here? It's perfectly reasonable to say when interest rates go up, there's always going to be a risk that it's going to do some damage. The question is it doing damage now? Is that the way you want to position for the next few months? Is that what we should be looking here for as a financial event? Or should we be arguing that this is a story of what's going to continue to be strong growth, and the immediate reaction to this is going to be central banks? You can tell the story and say, I want to tell both stories, but you have to come down on one side or the other. Which side are you on?
Are you done?
Yeah, done.
Okay. Well, is it because every time I try to start talking, you jump in about a half a sentence into it. So
that's not quite true, but go on.
If you're saying which side am I on, my modal view has been that we're in a cyclical lift. I'm comfortable with the cyclical lift story. I'm comfortable with the idea that the Fed, is not only not going to be cutting rates this year, which was the story through the first half, pushing back against that, but that they're going to be hiking rates this year. And so I'm comfortable with that story. I'm comfortable that it's from a position of strength. I think it's important to look at the vulnerabilities from this. I think shifting gears to the longer end of the curve, there's a lot of things to unpack there, and you kind of mentioned a whole bunch of things. I would say just quickly on Warsh kind of feeling like he can let the long end of the curve do the work for him and take a clean read of the markets without kind of Fed influence, is one, it's kind of completely backward, and two was upended this week with Bessent jumping into the market and moving things around. The Fed has to act, and if it doesn't, then the long end is going to reflect this sudden dovishness, if you believe that that's what's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Fed is going to act, as I said,
but not September, right?
Yeah, obviously nothing's known for sure. I think you'd have to see a stretch of data that I think you and I have laid out some markers on that. Next week, by the way, we will get core PCE inflation. If that does print near the 3/10 we're looking for, that will kind of make September a bit more live. And so I think if people are still around from the holidays playing the market, that and you do get a 3/10 on core PCE, that's suddenly September is going to look a little bit more interesting. Although I think that will be undercut by a world in which you see real consumer spending flat and real DPI flat for the month of July there, underscoring that soft patch. But that's kind of where I'm coming down. I don't think the long end moves have been particularly large. I when you said Bessent was going to get a little something out of the some short term gain in terms of their efforts this week. If that short term gain was 24 hours, then you'd be right. But I think where we are right now is it's complete, at least the 30 years almost completely unwound whatever they did, and so the only thing you end up with is a diminished credibility, which kind of should ultimately add some risk premium in the market. So as you kind of correctly noted up front, but you know, you have had some drifting up in long run neutral rates. The Fed has been moving that up. That is consistent with the productivity story, the AI story, ultimately the need to generate.
Well, there's a pretty big gap here right now in the world where the real 10-year yield is sitting at close to 240 and the Fed's still sitting with a 1% real neutral rate estimate. There's a huge gap in that space.
Yeah. Well, when you say 1% real yield estimate, so you're saying so they're at.
They've got a 3.1 on their long-term neutral, which you take a 2% inflation haircut is 1.1. The 10-year real yield is at 2.4%, roughly speaking.
Yeah.
It's a huge gap.
Yeah.
And this has come back to the point that I made earlier, which is I think what one message we're supposed to be taking from the market, and it's been a consistent message for a while, but I think it increasingly gets currency in the latest environment, is that the real economy is telling the Fed that the neutral rate is higher. The credit cycle is kicking in a way that I think reinforces that. And this is all independent. I think what's interesting is this is independent of where necessarily inflation news is going to go. I mean, I think there's an interesting question here as to whether or not the Fed should be hiking, even if the inflation news, you know, sits somewhere, not going all the way back towards target, but let's just say we get something like a path where we're running 2.5 to 3 on core inflation. I think there's an argument in the current macro financial environment that on a forward looking basis, looking out 12, 18, 24 months, partly with what you said a minute ago about having to worry about credit cycles and asset price bubbles, you know, that you're supposed to still be leaning against this thing, even if inflation is not that high relative to your objective. You can argue I'm not sure I'd want to argue this, but you could argue that's a little bit about how the ECB reaction function sits, but that's not correct. Let me take that back.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting question, is whether or not what the interest rate markets are telling you, what the credit markets are telling you, what the financial markets are telling you and what the growth data is telling you is enough to say, hey, independent of what the inflation news prints, the Fed's too low.
Yeah. So we're, and that's fine. I feel like that's shifting gears back into the near term cycle conversation.
It is the two are mixed. Those things are both connected, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you've got the near-term cycle, and then you've got like kind of where things are going to settle in the 5 to 10 year space. I'm comfortable with the idea that short-term rates not only can but need to be higher.
But let me, since I got to go and get into a car in about 5 minutes, and there's two topics we could talk about. I know which one I would prefer to end. One would be Jackson Hole. That's not my preference. The other would be talking about the BOJ, which we made material changes in our forecast this week, now having a September and December hike and having the BOJ get above 2% on policy rates next year. Which do you want to talk about, Joe?
I think we can do two. Let me just kind of, unless you have strong views that are...
I have strong views that I don't have strong views on Jackson Hole. Go on.
It's the more interesting in one because it's like front and center. But I agree the BOJ move is, some sense it's us kind of getting right with a view that has been evolving in this direction for quite some time, but even in the last month, pulling forward to September. They got the green light, effectively green light from the government that this is something that's needed, that this is an economy that's cyclically needing of higher interest rates. The inflation story is calling for higher interest rates. You're getting a little bit of the fiscal premium, term premium that you kind of talked about on that front. That's probably the one we could spend a lot of time talking about, like what is the debt sustainability dynamics in Japan. I think it's mostly obvious, but I think there's some important kind of wrinkles that make it somewhat more complicated. But ultimately, direction of travel is up in a world where this is this and maybe the Swiss are kind of the world's funding currencies. I think you're going to see some material adjustments taking place between now and the end of next year. And we've been flagging this, right? You and I on this call that more needs to be done and probably need to go through 2%. Now that's our call. On Jackson Hole quickly, I guess I would just flag, markets always kind of seem to want to make this a bigger deal than it is. And while there have been some important moments, whether it was kind of Powell flagging the need for cuts a couple of years ago, flagging the need for aggressive hikes in his "There Will Be Pain" speech in 22. You could say Yellen flagging hikes in 2016. You could say Greenspan's conundrum. There's maybe about five or six in the past 25 years, but for the most part, they don't move markets as much as people want to think they do. I would start with that. I would emphasize all of this is underscored by three things in the current environment. One, that you have a Governor Warsh who does not want to give any forward guidance at all. So that's going to make it unlikely that you get that much. And then I think the biggest thing is that we just haven't had that. If the data had printed the way we had hoped they would in July, everything would be gearing up towards a September hike. And I'm not saying Warsh would signal that, but boy, I personally, and you and I debated this, I think he would have gotten about as close as you can without forward guidance to just giving a nod to that. I think the markets would have locked in that hike after this meeting. Because the data you have this soft patch, suddenly everything's data dependent. And so even in a world where you have a governor who doesn't want to give forward guidance, the data is not really pushing for forward guidance at this point. It's just kind of uncertain. So I think for all of those reasons, I just wouldn't really expect to get that much next week.
Okay. I think we're going to have to end it there. I got to actually run. Lots of things we'll have to continue to talk about. I think we're off next week, right?
I'm definitely off next week. I don't know if you are.
Yeah, we're off next week, and then we'll pick it up sometime around Labor Day. Thanks, everybody, and take care. Bye.